Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make the difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listeners, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Well, spring is here, although with that weather forecast, maybe not. But it comes of a time when there's melting snow, supposedly, and the arrival of robins and tiny snowdrops push through the soil. It's also a time when governments pass budgets. Besides the federal and provincial budgets coming within the next week or so, municipalities are busy too. Last week we talked to Coburg about its budget for 2019. This week we're talking to Port Hope. And we have two excellent guests to help us understand the town's plan for the upcoming fiscal year. But that's not all. I'm very pleased to have two guests from Cornerstone, the women's shelter, coming to talk about their efforts to create affordable housing in Northumberland with two unique programs, one you may already know about called Home Sharing, and the second, a new development project in partnership with a local developer. So let's get started. If you're a homeowner or a business in Port Hope, you may already know the town passed its annual budget for 2019 a few weeks ago that included a 1.9% increase to the $41 million budget. That may be good news as it barely is at the rate of inflation. If you are listening to the mayor and council, they would certainly tell you that. But what is behind such a simple number? My two guests today can certainly help us figure it out. Lori Carr is a councillor for Port Hope, and she's the member responsible for finance. Joining her is David Baxter, the director of finance for the town. Welcome both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
Before we unpack the budget, I want to take a moment to talk to you about the timeline for this budget. Because I understand the budget was approved on December 10th. Is that correct? It was December 10th, mid-December, that you passed the budget? Approval?
I believe it was actually approved on the 18th.
Okay, of December?
Of December, yeah. Yes. On the 10th and the 13th, we did full-day sessions to work on the budget just immediately the week after the new council was sworn in. So it was there and ready for us, and we attacked it immediately.
So my question is this. Here you are, you got sworn in on the 4th of December.
Mm-hmm.
You've barely ink has dried on the paper that you signed for swearing in, and all of a sudden you've got the 2019 $41 million budget dead in front of you.
That's right.
How is there enough time to be making good decisions about such a complex document and one that's so vital to how the year is going to unfold in such a short amount of time?
Well, we were very fortunate to have David leading the group of our directors, and without a CAO, they work very closely together. So they had done all the preparation, all the legwork. Everything was there in a properly documented fashion so that it was a relatively easy process for council to be able to go through and review everything that was there for us.
But you could imagine, I mean, somebody sitting back could look at that and say, well, you know, that's just the bureaucrats coming in and you guys just rubber stamped it. How can you put a critical eye to something? How can you delve into it deeply enough to make sure that it matches with the goals and objectives? I mean, there wasn't even a strategic plan at that place. So, I mean, mm-hmm. What goals were you aiming for? So, I mean, I could see people saying that. How would you respond to those critics?
I think what we have to do is respect the fact that the people bringing the information to us are the experts. And, you know, we have to put confidence in our team to allow them to provide us with the information that they have and know that they are going in the right direction. Yes, there is a new strategic plan, but the old strategic plan was in place, mm-hmm. and this aligned with that, and so we moved ahead with it.
Okay. David, so there's a 1.9% increase. What does that mean in terms of dollar value to the average homeowner?
Well, to the average homeowner in the urban area, that works out to roughly $46. And that's based on the typical single detached residential home of about $254,000.
Okay. Now, some people may get their tax bill and the Port Hope portion may go up more than that or maybe less than that. How does that work, that assessment piece, how does that work and affect the amount that somebody might pay?
So ultimately, once we've established the budget and we figure out what the total valuation of all of the different properties that we're going to spread that levy out amongst, and we set a rate, we'll be doing that within the next month. Mm-hmm. And then we take that rate and it applies to each of the properties. So often, we may have someone come in and say, you know, well, why did my taxes go up? You know, 10% or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll walk them back and explain to them that it's actually gone up, you know, to the 2% for the rate change. But what they've experienced is they've put some addition on their house or, you know, for whatever reason, you know, the market for their house, their area specifically has really gone up. And so they're essentially, it's the same rate, but it's being applied to a higher property value.
Okay. Now, I'm wondering if you could explain the radioactive waste fund and how it was used to keep the increase down.
Right, so the LLRW fund is invested, and each year it provides a rate of return. Council had passed a motion such that 80% of the annual net increase in the value of that fund each year is applied to reduce the annual rural municipal levy. Mm-hmm. And then we keep 20% of it in the fund, with the thought being that over time, you know, the value of the $10 million you're earning on it reduces as the population and the number of properties increases. So what we're anticipating, say, for this year, is in the urban area, we would use $105,000 to reduce the tax levy requirement. And for the rural area, it would be $185,000 to reduce the tax levy requirement.
Okay. Now, that fund, where does it come from? Where is its origin again, just so that people who may not know?
Right. So when the municipality agreed to actually be a host location for them to store the material that they're going to be cleaning up as part of the Port Hope Area Initiative, both the urban and rural areas received $10 million each as part of that. And so that $10 million has been, the principal has been maintained, and it has been invested. And it's from the earnings on that investment that we use those funds to be able to reduce the tax levy.
Okay. Now, when we talk about a tax increase, there's also an increase in assessment. Mm-hmm. Is it possible to tell us what the increase in the assessment overall was that would just take from the building and the additions and all that good stuff that took place?
Right. So the main part that we look at each year is what we call the net growth or the new builds, because those are essentially new taxpayers, so to speak, mm-hmm. who are adding to the tax base. And any funds that are coming in from there are funds then that the existing tax base does not need to contribute towards. Now, last year, the actual growth in Port Hope was actually lower than typical. It was actually at 0.9%. So we didn't have as much growth adding to the tax base as we had, say, in other years. Two or three years ago, we would have saw more like a 2.5%. But that has to do with, I don't think we're going to see that continue. That's just more about cycles of different housing developments and also industrial commercial developments occurring.
Okay. Lori, what are the things that you're most proud of in this budget?
I was proud of the fact that we were able to keep it under the 2%. That was a goal that we had, which we achieved. I was pleased that we were able to offer some community grants that were pretty critical. And even though that's a small part of the overall budget, it's certainly something that's very visible to the residents on a day-to-day basis, so it's nice to be able to do that. And just to to keep growing and to keep moving forward on any of the projects that we're doing, and to be able to find a way to properly finance that so that we can continue on a good balanced growth.
Okay. What are the greatest challenges you think the town is facing fiscally in this budget?
I think, David, do you have any?
Well, the challenge this year is the same challenge we've been faced for several years. Laurie and I are actually talking about it on the way here, is the capital funding. And this is something that, you know, say in 2010, the province, the way capital was accounted for all changed, and you had to account for your buildings and all those items. And now we're going through another phase where there's a big focus, and we're now actually required to have an actual asset management plan. So not just to know, put a dollar towards those things, but how are you going to maintain those? How are you putting money aside so that it's financially sustainable? So when that, you know, comes up for replacement, you're not looking in that 1 year to come up with all of the funds. And that is a challenge. I think we're, ahead of, say, other municipalities our size. Larger municipalities have been working on this for many years. But it is, you know, it is a real challenge, and where we're seeing that, you know, our capital funding levels need to increase. You know, so for example, just for general municipal purpose, meaning excluding the utilities, we right now, and we're still growing through the process, but we figure we need about $8.6 million a year in capital funding. Right now, we've in this past budget, we're just under $2 million from levy, and then of course we have other grant funding in as well. But you know, we're not. We're about halfway there to, mm-hmm. a financially sustainable level. And that is a challenge, and the municipality has had a plan of increasing the amount of capital funding each year by $500,000. And that was something that we were able to achieve. We've been able to kind of achieve or make it up other years. You think about all of a sudden if you've got growth in your assessment and those new dollars we were just talking about coming in, the thought was we'd take that money essentially, and that would be the money we would then dedicate. So new money coming into our base, and that new money we would go to, increasing our capital funding to get to a sustainable level. As we just spoke of this year, having a less than 1% increase, doing the $500,000, which essentially requires about a 2.5% increase. It just wasn't feasible. So it's something that we're going to continue to focus on. It's already going to be a key focus in the next draft strategic plan. But it is a challenge, and it's something that we just need to keep focus on and keep working towards, because we definitely want to get to the point that we have a good plan and we can afford to maintain our existing assets.
Well, and I mean, what we're talking about in practical terms is potholes in the street, right, and broken sidewalks, and lights not getting replaced, and all those kinds of things. I mean, these are essential things, the infrastructure of a town. So the question then becomes: is why are we so mesmerized with keeping increases below 2% or so freaking low that these poor guys in the bureaucratic side are sitting there going, pulling their hair out, going, we've got $8 million worth of capital projects that we could be doing, but we're not, for the want of maybe a 0.5% increase extra, so 2.5% or 3%, but at least giving them the financial footing that they need to get on top of this infrastructure, which, again, everyday citizens see and experience when they're not working properly.
Well, and that's where the balancing act comes in for all small municipalities.
But doesn't it get to a point where, are we really balancing, or are we robbing our future? And I guess that's the question.
Yeah, I would love to see, us to be in a position where we could immediately fund everything that we want to do, but that's not practical. We've got, we have an older community in Port Hope for the most part that is starting to change. So there is some hope for the future. But a lot of the people that are living there are on fixed incomes. And you have to respect the fact that their income can't go up, and, they can go and grab another part-time job if they need to make a bit of extra money. They're working with limited incomes, and you have to respect that.
I understand the two major projects out of this budget is the Brown Street, a major construction project, and then the Pemberton Road extension. Mm-hmm. Am I right in that? So why are those two, how did those two get picked, and why are they so important to the town that they're doing them now?
Do you want to...
Certainly. So the Brown Street project is one that, has kind of been kind of in the plan for several years, kind of waiting, as we get some of our increase. So it is one that, while it isn't a huge project, it's not like a main feeder line. It is, really important to get in and replace some of the failing infrastructure. The other thing on the project is to do it at a time where we can do, say, the water and the wastewater, and the road. That one is going to be more of a full reconstruction project. I'm not the expert in utilities, but, when it came up, I even took a drive down the road, and you can quickly see why that one is important. The Pemberton Drive one is a little bit different in that it isn't replacing existing infrastructure. It's actually adding, infrastructure, which from a finance side, I always caution against. When we're not sustaining our existing, but the Pemberton Drive one is very important because in getting the development through the business park, having that more direct access right from the 401 is very key, and we've had come forward just recently to council is a proposal for a hotel, and that was one of the key features for them to come in and build is that people could be able to come right off the 401. And go straight up that street. So that is something that we're working with. We're working with different partners, and we're putting in for grant stuff as well to be able to reduce the impact to the taxpayer. But it is kind of vital in having that development. And as that development occurs, that development will again add to our tax base, and they'll be contributing taxpayers as well. So
now, if I understood or read the documents right, council got a raise this time around. In this budget, did I read that correctly? That the mayor is now getting $55,000, deputy mayor $28,900, the councillors now have a raise to $22,500. Did I get that right? That was part of this package.
Yes.
So in that instance, then usually tradition has it that the previous council approves a salary increase because it often the perception is it doesn't look good on politicians to be giving themselves more money. Mm-hmm. Why did you choose to not have that done, and why did you allow there to be an increase? Because when you go back to what was it, 2016, I think councillors at that time were getting like $16,500. I mean, that's a 36% increase. And when you think about everybody else, nobody gets that kind of increase these days. So, how did you guys do that? What made you do that?
Okay, it was a two-step process in that instance. There was a community group that actually did all the research and checked everything against other local municipalities and like-sized municipalities. And they came back to the previous council with a recommendation of what the rate would be for the next council, which is the current one. And the rate that they came back with was what was determined to be the pay for this term of council. Then at the beginning of this term of council, there was a change in policy as far as income tax was concerned. It used to be that one-third of the rate was tax-free. As of 2019, that stopped. So what was done was the councillors were left with the same net pay, but it had to change the gross in order to do that because of the taxes.
Okay. Moving on then. When we were talking to various candidates back in the fall, a lot of people from Port Hope talked about, and in fact across the county, people were talking about affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And I look at this budget, and while it was a big issue during the election, I don't see it reflected anywhere in this budget. Did I miss something, or was that not followed through on for this fiscal year?
That's correct. There's no money specifically for affordable housing in this budget. It was one of the items that was on the table as we worked to get down to that 1.9% increase. It wasn't included. But at the same time, like many and many others, and you spoke previously about things that are going to be on this new council strategic plan, mm-hmm. All the other municipalities essentially had to pass their budget and then do their strategic plan as well. Mm-hmm. We've been working with the county in terms of the affordable housing project, and then we'll be bringing forward, kind of a bit more of Port Hope's plan. And we'll be doing our strategic plan, of which that is certainly been part of. And then once we get that and kind of have a bit of a plan together, we'll already be working on the 2020 draft budget. Actually, we'll be starting on it fairly soon, internally. So it's really about getting those, figuring what the plan is going to be, and then starting to plan for the funds to be able to support it.
Okay, well, I understand that from a bureaucratic side, that makes a lot of sense. From a political side, though, I mean, you're walking the streets, you're knocking on doors, people are saying this is a top priority. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're making a lot of choices. Why didn't this not get the emphasis?
I think probably because it was important to us to understand what the county plan was going to be, because they actually take the lead in this, and we try as a municipality to support what the county is proposing in that. And they had not prepared their plan at that time. It just actually was in the last couple of weeks that their documentation has come out. So now we know what the county's expectations are. And now we can determine how we can fit ourselves into that.
Because when I had the mayor in and I was interviewing him, he seemed very committed and, was arguing very strongly that it's not something they were going to depend upon the county level, but there was going to be something done locally. I noticed, too, that the Greenwood Coalition had asked for $15,000 and you gave them only $5,000 as a grant for the work that they do. Why didn't you give that was a $10,000. I mean, in a $41 million budget, that's, that's not a lot of money. How come you didn't, at least in a token fashion, at least, do something like that? Why did you only give them $5,000?
There were so many different groups that were looking for funding, and we tried to spread it out the best we could amongst as many places as we could.
But, when you look at the community grants, because you talked about them earlier, and I had a good look at them, too, because I agree with you. I think these are the things that a community sees very directly from a municipality. And I noticed that Float Your Fanny, the Capitol Theater, and the Community Care Hospice were the three that received rather substantial amounts of money. We're talking $30,000 for the Float Your Fanny, $45,000 for the Capitol Theater, and then another $40,000 for the Community Care Hospice. Why did those priorities get so much money and the others didn't? Because I think that adds up to about $115,000 out of $155,000. That's a major chunk.
Mm-hmm.
Why did they get the priority and not the other things?
The hospice is something that we've been trying to include for, the last year or so, and we just felt that it was our responsibility at this time to get that started. Some of the other communities had been able to jump in earlier, and we wanted to make sure to show our support for that. And we've made a commitment for $200,000 for hospice, but it will be coming over 4-5 years. Yeah.
Okay, and for the purpose of transparency, I just want to mention also that Northumberland 89.7, this radio station, had also applied for a community grant, and they got $1,500. So what's next in finance? What are you guys working on next? You've already said, I guess, David, there's no rest for the wicked. You're already getting the strategic plan in place, and then you're off getting budgets going again. What's next?
Well, right now we've got two major things underway internally. We are working at rolling out a new software program that is going to be able to do the asset management that we talked about. That'll be more of an internal tool. But we are doing right now our development charges. So every 4 years, you're required to update your development charges. And We are working right now, or actually have later on today, a meeting with developers coming in, walking them through a bit of an orientation. And then shortly we'll be coming forward with this in a draft new development charges. And just for anyone listening, development charges are what any new property or any existing property that, say, wants to do a large expansion, they pay these development fees with the idea that growth should pay for growth. So, you know, over time, we will need, wider roads or larger capacity. And that shouldn't be all that cost be borne on the existing taxpayers. So this is why we have these development charges. So right now we're in the midst of doing that. And later on this year we'll be doing looking at the financial plans for the water and wastewater utilities and looking at the rate, setting a rate structure for the next 4 years based on a 10-plus year plan.
I want to thank the both of you for coming in and talking to me today. This has been Port Hope Councillor Lori Carr and Director of Finance David Baxter. I know you're both very busy, so thanks for coming in and clearing a lot of stuff up. And on that note, we're going to take a break for some commercials. When we come back, we'll be talking about the Home Share program. So please stay tuned to Consider This on Northumberland 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news. We'll be right back.